struggling with your faith? You're not the only one. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
Folks, changing gears a little bit, it's time to bring on really one of Canada's premier investigative journalists, reporters, writers, broadcasters. She's a professor, she's a lawyer, she's an author, she does a heck of a lot more in a week than I would ever hope to do. The one and only Paula Todd on the phone with us. Paula, how you doing?
Hi there, thanks for that.
Do you sleep or no? Just
a bit.
You really are just, I think, one of Canada's gems. Paula Todd is the best-selling author of the first ebook to break news in Canada, Finding Carla, How I Tracked Down an Elusive Child Serial Killer and Discovered a Mother of Three, along with the best-selling A Quiet Courage, Inspiring Stories from All of Us. For more than two decades, Paula has worked full-time for Canada's major newspapers, magazines, and television networks as a prominent political and legal reporter, feature writer, and host of popular television programs. She is a frequent speaker, teacher of journalistic and digital ethics, sits on the board of Canadian Journalists for Free Expressions, and chairs its Digital Issues Advisory Committee. And this book, Extreme Mean, I think this is causing a bit of a stir. How has been the response from media so far? Obviously, it's a hot-button topic. They want to have you on to chat about it, but have you gotten any pushback?
Pushback from the tormentors and cyber abusers that I have decided in this book to reveal. So you will see me with my head cut off and photoshopped, and already I'm hearing from people who take issue with, obviously, my analysis of why people are being so mean online right now. But the biggest problem I'm finding is so interesting. So many of us, in the media including, have our sights set on only one topic online, and that's cyberbullying. But what I discovered, I worked for about 2 years on the research and writing of Extreme Mean, and what I discovered is that we shouldn't be talking about cyberbullying alone. We should be talking about cyber abuse. We've got kids and youth and lots of adults who are being stalked and harassed, defamed online, and adults who are also doing it to each other. So we've got a much bigger problem, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't believe there's a solution unless we start talking really openly about what some of us are doing on the internet.
Okay. As I've been looking through your book and been just thinking about this topic in general, because, look, it's not in my backyard. My kids are 25 and 21, and even if there was a bit of cyber abuse or bullying or whatever we want to call it back in the day with them, they had a certain makeup about them that snapped back pretty quick or just let it roll off and walked away kind of thing. Now, not every kid is like that. And that's, you know, through no fault of their own, through environment or genetics or whatever. Not every kid responds the same way to booze. Not every kid responds the same way to cyber abuse. So
my first point, though, is this. First of all, it is in your backyard, and I'll explain. It's in all of our backyards. And, just the new research is showing that even being exposed to this kind of abusive language and constant negativity and the polarization that which occurs in even the most benign conversation, it's affecting all of our psychological health. But I'd also just say what infuriates me, and you didn't say it, in fact, I'm sure you're going to agree with this, what infuriates me are the people out there who say, let's just forget about cyber abuse because it's just the vulnerable kids. You know, the Amanda Todd, she had learning disabilities and some emotional challenges, and the people who've gone on to commit suicide in which cyber abuse is considered perhaps a factor in it, well, they obviously had mental health problems. My point is this, we're a humanitarian society. We want to evolve into better people. So obviously, those we must protect the most are the vulnerable among us. which is why I wrote this book. It's like, wake up. You know, it's just, and the other thing is, Drew, I don't know about you, but do you really want to be in a world where we're now raising children and advising them, numb yourself emotionally to the worst stuff is online. Take the most technologically brilliant piece of communication, you know, that we've ever had in our life, and let's all try to ignore what we're saying to each other. I think we should be using the internet in a completely different way.
Okay, I know that you've spoken a lot about the phrase, the word anonymity. Anonymity, one of the hardest words to say on radio. Anonymity is, you know, it's an ingredient in all of this. But from what I'm getting from you, Paula, is that the building blocks for cyber abuse are mental health, drugs, alcohol abuse, and Schadenfreude.
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 Yeah, I'm not German either. So for everybody out there, I'm probably saying it wrong, and we all apologize. But Schadenfreude is a word that isn't translated yet into other languages, but means precisely the same thing no matter where you are in the world. And that's the joy you can get from other people's pain. You know, on the sort of slightly more benign level, it's jealousy, it's envy, it's wanting to pull other people down so that you don't have to challenge yourself to become better. It's anger at other people's creativity and ambition. And the internet is filled with people trying to harm each other's reputation and, you know, and sort of destroy things.
Well,
that
word certainly has been translated into English. It's just that we can't say those words on air, you see. So the thing that blew me away in all of this, Paula, is revenge sites. Are you kidding me?
No, I wish I was. The first time I saw a revenge porn site, I'd actually found out about it from police officers. In order to put this book together, it's actually an inspirational book. What I'm trying to do is show you, give you a snapshot of what's going on online right now so that we can get rid of some of these myths and, you know, platitudes and we can actually do something about it. Police officers, including some at Interpol I interviewed, begged me not to name the revenge porn sites, and I didn't. I didn't name them. But what they are, and there are more than one, is websites that people have set up, sometimes to make money, other times just for the glee of hurting women, where ex-lovers, partners, just mean, sexist people send photographs of others that had been taken in intimate relationships. And when you see the pictures of these women, they're looking up so innocently, and they're obviously having their photograph taken, you know, in lingerie, sometimes even nude, by people they clearly trust very, very much. And obviously the intent of these photographs was not for it to be shared with anybody. But what happens after the relationship breaks up, or just, you know, people who are just in general horrible enough to want to do this, they're posted on public sites. And in order to get them posted, you have to provide the woman's name, address of her home, where she works, all her social media handles, her email address. And what's happening is the women are being stalked now. They're losing their jobs. Some have lost their families. We had a big bust in the United States, which is still waiting to go to court. But it really exemplifies the very worst ways that people can use the internet.
Okay, Paula, you cannot be this passionate about something unless you've got some kind of personal thing happening here. Like, why are you this wound up about it?
Well, I would like to say that I can be. I became a lawyer even though what I wanted to do was to write, although my mom told me it was a hobby, and I guess she said, what was I going to do for a job? But I've always been passionate. I can't bear it when people attack each other, particularly when people are not in a position to defend themselves. I just, like, we all have our Achilles heel, and mine is I can't stand injustice, which is, you know, really why I went to law school. So. And I've been a journalist for a long time. You know, you mentioned it, more than 20 years. And what I've discovered, especially when you're on television, is people are way nicer than you could ever imagine. And they're way, way more vicious than you, obviously, as a human being, deserve. You know, so you do grow a bit of a skin to it. But I have to say, and it's a very good question, and I will tell you, that after I tracked down Carla Homolka and managed to spend an hour with her, which is something that no journalist had ever done before, and it was very very scary. And of all the things I thought when I wrote the details of that interview up, I mean, I'd gone to see if she was still associating with young teenage girls, the same that she and Paul Bernardo had helped, you know, had kidnapped and sexually tortured and killed. I was checking on her, really, which I thought was my obligation as a journalist. But after the book, Finding Carla, it's an e-book, after it was published, I received, you know, the usual praise and the usual denigration, but the denigration was different online. And it was the worst misogynist language that you could have ever imagined, words I can't even bring myself to repeat, even though now I've seen them about a million times, accusing me of, you know, how could I not give this serial killer a break? And, you know, she didn't mean to do it, all of which is fair comment. I mean, I'm a huge free expression advocate, but the language that was used and, the death threats that I got, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And that's when I thought, you know, this isn't really about fair comment. This is about something else. And that's when I became particularly passionate about investigating. I spent a lot of time researching, and I went around the world and interviewed some of the leading bullying experts. And what I uncovered shocked and surprised me. So I'm hoping people will read the book.
Okay, again, on the phone with Paula Todd, and she's the author of Extreme Mean, which is out there now for you to get everywhere and anywhere. Tim, I want to bring you into this discussion. My cohort here, Tim, we call him Tim the Tool. He's just a very, very sharp gentleman. Tim, you know, you've been a high school teacher for how many years?
12 years now.
And when I say that, and I know this kind of bugged Paula a little bit at the start of the conversation, you know, it doesn't really affect me. It's not in my backyard. Did that tweak with you as well?
Yeah, well, a couple of reasons. One, I mean, I have teenage daughter and a son just turning 12 this week. Happy birthday, Liam. So it is starting to affect her. I can see it. Texting. It wasn't necessarily texting, like, you know, people saying things on the internet, but back and forth to her. Because
right.
It's so much easier to say something nasty when you don't have to look them in the face.
Right.
But I've also seen in the last 12 years bullying go from physical in your face, threatening kind of stuff to this cyber approach, which, unlike bullying, I guess, you know, every generation wants to claim their own cross or whatever, but, you know, physical bullying is very scary. I was bullied as a child. But I think the difference a lot of experts are saying is, like, you know, you get punched in the face and you go home. You have to come to school the next day and face that bully. But with cyberbullying, it follows you everywhere. You can't get away from it.
So have there been kids at your
yes,
school
absolutely.
That have been, really?
Yes. Yep.
No, please tell me no one's taking their life.
No one's taken their life.
Because, you know, Paula, that's the thing that makes the news. Unfortunately, it doesn't really get into our frontal lobes until a young kid takes their life.
And Tim, that's exactly why I'm taking the time to talk to people about this book, because while cyber abuse, many believe, can be a factor in suicide, we really need to be stepping back and taking a big picture look at this. Just because somebody doesn't kill themselves doesn't mean that cyber abuse isn't changing their lives, sometimes in intolerable ways. Here's what we know. We know that cyber abuse isn't even properly defined yet, so we're not competently counting the number of people who are being affected by it. We know now from just very, very new research that young people are denying it's affecting them. One, because they haven't been given the space to do it, but two, because the bullies will then, you know, take even more revenge on them. We do know, Tim, you're absolutely right, what you're observing anecdotally. I interviewed all kinds of educators, and in the United States particularly, they've brought in really strong punishment for traditional bullying, you know, as you say, punching people in the face. And so, and those rates are beginning to go down, and I thought it was a success story, and they said, no, it's gone online because it's harder for us to try to find them. But the other important thing is this. I don't just talk about kids in the book. I talk about young people, and I talk about adults. And what the research is showing in both cases is that if you are being targeted online, and even worse, if you then turn and become a bully, thereby creating new bullies, you are now at higher psychological risk for becoming depressed, to turning to drugs and alcohol, to having breakdowns in your relationship, and doing worse at school, and at work. So we need to stop fixating on, you know, and I'm not one who blames the media. Suicides are very critically an important disruptive events. They're tragic and they're horrible. Of course we're going to carry them in the news. But we have to say that's not the majority of the problem. The majority of the problem is that online abuse right now is tearing apart our kids' self-esteem. It's making it difficult to at work because people who we can't see are defaming us, and it's demoralizing our society.
Okay, on the phone with Paula Todd, talking about her book, Extreme Mean. Paula, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to word this properly, so just bear with me. This isn't going to come out right. you're just going to hate me for this.
I have an open mind and an open heart, so it'll be fine.
People are suckier these days. People are oversensitive. The politically correct insanity has gone through the roof. I'm not wishing us to go back to the time of Archie Bunker where we were callous jerks. But along with the awakening that we have been having in North America and sort of the globalization of feelings and I guess what I'm trying to say is it seems like there's two things that have collided. We are people who think that our rights matter more than anything else, and we have become very thin-skinned, and that has collided with what I call the comment section that we're living in these days. I can't even bother to read comment sections because you go three, maybe four in, and inevitably you hit a fight right away, or somebody's calling someone a jerk or names or whatever else. So we have the way to communicate to each other in the most chicken way. Remember when we were younger, we used to pass a note that said, "Will you go around with me? Yes, yes, no, or go away."
I knew that was
that was so me, and you rejected me so badly. You know, that was sort of our, you know, we didn't have the guts to say it to someone's face, so we pass them a note. We are now in a note-passing society, whether it's texting or comment sections or Facebook or whatever.
Listen, let's be really clear about this. I'm a free speech advocate, so I'm not walking around stepping on anybody's toes, and I'm certainly not advocating that. And we're not talking about the sort of high emotion, thin-skinnedness that comes from, you know, emotional turmoil, although I would say to you that when you're seeing some of that, it's really worthwhile to think about it rather than just to dismiss people, because it's going to be coming from someplace too, and whether that's their feelings about, you know, living a sense of unfairness, which ultimately can result in some terrible things, as we've recently seen. What I'm talking about is when people go online and they tell each other to kill themselves. When the cyber stalkers, you can, you know, in the book, you're gonna be able to see and relive the stories of targets themselves and of the tormentors and the stalkers that I managed to track down and get to talk as well. We're talking about a much, in some ways, lower standard of behavior. We're talking about people who set out to destroy each other by defaming them, putting up fake websites, and in fact have been quite successful. We're talking about men who do everything they can to encourage women hating with a kind of a precision that can result in women being further harmed. We're talking about predators and pedophiles who have found in the internet the most extraordinary accomplice that they've ever had. And we're talking about a system of communication which on its own, if used properly, would enhance the way we feel about each other and our sense of community. But unfortunately, you know, it also has a downside. And so what I explore in this book is who's disproportionately attracted to the internet to do serious harm.
Okay, so we're talking, I mean, you cover so much in this book, and I'm frustrated that I'm running out of time because you're such an easy person to chat with. You talk about the potential for police state issues, privacy problems, and we're living in this I'm on camera 24/7 Jerry Springer culture. We really are. You know, anybody under 30 walks around like they think they're on camera for the most part.
But I guess, I mean, the reason that there's so much in this book is I want this to be one-stop shopping. If you read Extreme Mean, you'll get right now a real snapshot of online culture and where we're going. Because what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to help parents understand that the internet is not as complicated as their children who use all this kind of code want us to be. But I'm also trying to show people that cyber abusers who think they might be cool or are suffering from huge mental health problems themselves, they need to be helped if they're to be stopped. Because right now, the more crap people put online, the more, you know, criminality that we see there, the greater excuse authoritarian governments have for shutting down the internet or taking control of it or handing it over to the corporation, which will charge us through our nose to be able to use this piece of device. So I guess what I'm saying, and don't be frustrated, the book is a read. I mean, it's got value in it, and I know that after you finish reading it, you might want to speak again. And I'd love that, because we need to get our act together online. We have to decide, as a great community, you know, what kind of tone do we want to promote? There are 5 billion more people right now poised to come online in the next decade. What do we want the world to look like then?
I want to just contrast two quick comments, and then we'll say goodbye here. First of all, this is some online garbage from, I guess, a cyber abuser. So it's all your fault your daughter died. You are personally responsible for her death with your blatant negligence. Why the F didn't you take away your whore daughter's webcam? Answer, because you're relieved that she's dead and that you no longer have to compete for your ex-hubby's romantic attention. Can you really blame him, fatty? Go kill yourself.
So that's a quote from my book, which I found online, and after some research, I know who wrote that.
You do not.
I do. And I can tell you that in many of these cases, what we're dealing with are everyday sadists, everyday psychopaths, people who have a tremendous desire, you know, particularly misogynists who really want to harm women as much as possible, and also, we have people who are desperate for attention because of underlying mental health issues. That point of view, for example, could have been expressed without the degradation and the sexism. But we're looking at people who are disproportionately coming to the internet to do harm to get pleasure. And then once you understand that, you really, and this is what I'm saying to everybody, once you understand where a lot of the trash is coming from, that people are sending you and your family, you will be able to cope so much better. And you'll also be demanding more help from everybody to deal with this.
Okay, let's contrast what I just read there with this. Dear Torrance Collier of Westport, you are a great kid. You are a cool kid. You have a million talents and can do anything in the world you ever dream of. I mean that, anything. You are the only Torrance Collier on this awesome planet, and no one can ever take that away from you. Listen, people can be really mean sometimes. Not just those mean kids in your class, but everywhere. People are mean because one of the only ways they can feel good about themselves is by putting someone down or calling them names. It makes them feel tough, makes them feel like they're somehow powerful. It's not powerful, it's cowardly. Bullies aren't cool, never have been, never will be. That was a note written by Sean Majumder, talking about this young boy over in, apparently he's an 11-year-old boy, he's the only black child in the community of Westport.
And what Sean's doing there, that positive feedback, is precisely what all of us should be doing. For every negative comment we see, we shouldn't be sharing, we shouldn't be liking. We become bully birds that way. We should be adding at least 2 positive comments. But the second part I take issue with, I'm not out to do to cyber abusers what cyber abusers are doing to the rest of us. And a lot of times when people are bullies, particularly, well, I won't even say that, it's adults as well. They could have mental health issues underlined. They're dealing with stress and strains of their own. Not all of them. Some of them are mentally unwell, and they deserve some sympathy and some assistance too. So rather than getting ourselves all worked up that there are people, you know, and a majority out there who are trying to get us, which the research does not support, we need to understand that the internet can amplify this tenacious minority. And if you read the book, I'm sorry that I keep saying this, but I work for a really long time, so you don't have to, you know, you've got, as I say, one-stop shopping. Once you read the book and you begin to understand a bit, I think we should even stop using that kind of bullying vocabulary, you know, smash bullying, stomp bullying, kick bullying. We don't want to do that to each other. So I think any time that you see people being abused online, feel free, first of all, report it, and feel free to add something positive. Don't engage the negative, but do add something positive.
You have been one of the most interesting interviews I've had in a long time. Paula Todd, investigative writer, broadcaster, professor, lawyer, author, triathlete, swim coach.
Sorry about that. I did just do the 200 kilometer ride to
Oh, you're cancer. Kidding me.
But wait. I have asthma, and so I did have to stop a little bit early the second day. So just so you know, I worked really hard. I went through a lot of tough things, and absolutely every person who's out there in this world is fantastic for their own reasons. Let's not lose sight of that, please.
ExtremeMean.com, Paula Todd. Thank you, Paula.
Take good care.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Wow, a lot of stuff there. Get the book. Read it. Bring it into your life. Extreme Mean. Hey, folks, I want to tell you about the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA, except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our 1250 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?